All right, if you're all comfy, if you are settled in, if you're strapped up, I think we're fine, you know. We can blast off on this adventure. Let me take you across the universe in a brand new Fun Kids Science Weekly. Welcome along, my name is Dan. This is the show where we search through the solar system to find some of those science secrets lurking around. That's a lot of S's, and we've got a lot of stuff to cram in this week. We are chatting to the fantastic author Vashti Hardy, who has come up with brilliant ideas about how you can make new things out of old things.
I took a young inventive girl who's just moved homes. She's looking to kind of make her house feel like a home. And the way she does it is get out all her boxes of inventions. And then from that, she finds a book. And then she sees this very tiny little elf bot. And she ends up falling through the pages where this elf bot takes her to Santa's marvelous mechanical workshop.
And we'll join our microbe friends, Benny and Mao. They're inside your gut. They're looking at the food that we eat and how we know if it's good for you.
Bigger and better crops means we can feed more of the billions of people on the planet and can even make them healthier in the process. Although some people think that we could feed the world right now, it's just that richer countries have an unfair amount of the supplies and how they are controlled.
And I've got your questions to answer. This week they are on light bulbs and how and why we breathe. It's all on the way in a brand new Fun Kids Science Weekly. Let's kick things off with your science in the news. Now, the UK this week has been hit by Storm Ciarán. I hope that you are safe. I hope that nowhere where you live has been really badly affected by this. It's been one of the most severe bits of weather that this country has seen in years. Winds of up to 60 miles an hour plus, up to 100 miles an hour, have seen sweeping across the country. Schools and roads have been closed. Many homes have been without power. I hope that you haven't been troubled by too much and that you are very safe. Also, let's head to space. Four UK astronauts could soon be heading into orbit on an all-British mission. An American company called Axiom organises visits to the International Space Station and they're developing another plan. The project would probably cost £200 million or more and it would see four astronauts from the UK go into space for the first time in a little while. The last person from this country who went into orbit was Tim Peake, friend of the show. He's always on this podcast, dropping me emails, giving us calls. He flew to the International Space Station back in 2015. So brilliant news that almost 10 years later, we might get some new people up there. And this is very interesting. The government in the UK have said that bringing species like beavers back to England is no longer a top priority. Now, in recent years, animals and plants have been reintroduced by charities as part of efforts to restore the country's biodiversity, to bring back creatures that maybe were here but have gone away. We're trying to do our bit for the ecosystem because a recent report says that one in six UK species are at risk of extinction. The government is saying, though, instead of like bringing new creatures back, let's focus on making the homes a lot better for the animals that are here. What do you think about this? I see both sides of it. It would be nice to have these creatures that were here coming back home, but is there a point in bringing them here if the habitat isn't safe for them to live? Why can't we do both, though? That's a question we need to ask. Let's check in with Techno Mum then, one of our favourite gadget geniuses that knows all about the technology that you and I use every single day. This week, it's all about the cables that help our TVs, computers and phones to work.
Techno Mum Fast Files.
How many telephones, computers and televisions have you got in your house? Count them. For telephones, televisions and computers connected to a phone line, even if wirelessly through a modem, digital information is carried to and from our homes by a network of cables that run under the streets. Transmitters at one end of the cable turn pictures, words and sounds into a digital code made of ones and noughts, whilst at the other end, a receiver decodes the information back into the same pictures, words and sounds. The old-fashioned way of sending the digital code was with electrical pulses, but there's something that travels faster than anything else. And that's light. Fibre optic cables use light to send the digital code. It's sent in pulses down the cables, a bit like shining a torch in a tunnel. And I imagine a tunnel would be a much more peaceful place, actually.
Technomom, with the Institution of Engineering and Technology, advancing and sharing knowledge.
Let's get to your questions then. I love this part of the show. I hope you love asking questions as much as I love answering them. If you have anything sciencey that you want answered, just leave it as a voice note for me on the free Fun Kids app, or you can do it at funkidslive.com, and then I'll do the digging. I will become a science superhero, a dangerous detective, and I will figure out the answer for you. First up this week, it's a voice note from Joseph.
Hello, Dan. My name is Joseph, and my science question is, how do light bulbs work?
Thank you, Joseph. How do light bulbs work? Well, inside the glass dome of a light bulb is a very thin strip of metal. It's called a filament. Now, that metal is extremely hard to melt. It's usually a metal like tungsten. It's got a very high melting point, and because it's trapped in this sealed glass dome conservatory thing, air can't get to it and it can't kind of get damaged that way. Now, the metal is attached to wires, which allow electricity to run through it, and that makes the wire very hot because there's a lot of energy that passes through it. And part of that heat energy becomes light energy. So it glows. So that is how light bulbs work. Joseph, thank you so much for your voice note that you sent over to funkidslive.com. This is one that was sent to me as a message on the website from Charlie in Kent, who wants to know, why do we breathe automatically? Well, you breathe, Charlie, because every part of your body needs oxygen. Take a deep breath. See what happens. Air fills your lungs. Oxygen from the air then moves over to your bloodstream. Very important. It carries it around the body. It powers all of your organs and all of your muscles. That power creates energy. The waste of that energy is another gas called carbon dioxide. And we breathe that out. Now, your brain is constantly getting signals from all over your body that looks at your oxygen levels that you need and the carbon dioxide levels that you don't really need. Now, when the carbon dioxide level becomes too high, you need to breathe out. And the only thing that you can really do there is breathe in. So that is how that cycle happens. You have to breathe out to get rid of this CO2, which means you need to breathe in, so you're taking oxygen. And that's why it's this natural process, Charlie. Thank you so much for the question. Listen, if you have anything you want answered next week on the show, please do open up the free Fun Kids app. You can record a message while you're on there, click that button, and let me know what you want to ask. It's the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Now, an award-winning author is bringing out a book stuffed with science secrets, perfect for Christmas. It's all about why we can make new things from old things. It's called Santa's Marvelous Mechanical Workshop. We're talking upcycling with Vashti Hardy. Thank you so much for being there.
Oh, thank you so much for having me along. I'm so excited to be here.
So, a lot of your books have focused on STEM and why we need to think about the world and what's around us. What made you want to talk about upcycling and explore that in this new novel?
Well, like invention and science, as you say, it comes into all my stories in one shape or some form or another. So I wanted to do it in this pitch book in a simple way. And I've always kind of been really fascinated by the short kind of shelf life, I suppose, of a toy in a lifespan. It has that kind of short time when it's of use, and then kids grow up, toys move on, they get broken. So it's really thinking about what's the afterlife of a toy, what happens to it, what can happen to it. And, you know, in this time when we've got a lot of waste and plastic pollution, it's just something that I kind of think about a lot. And the theme of the story evolved from that, really.
And you want to make a book out of it. So tell us how that idea becomes Santa's Marvelous Mechanical Workshop.
Well, obviously, you take an inventive young child first as your main character. And I really believe in championing, especially young females, young girls, because there is still a big inequality in grown-ups between males and females that work in the STEM industries. So I always do like to kind of champion young female STEM girls, because it's really my way of saying, yep, you can do this too as well. So I took a young inventive girl who's just moved homes, and she's looking to kind of make her house feel like a home. And the way she does it is get out of her boxes of inventions and things that she's made herself. And then from that, she finds a book. And this book she doesn't recognize because it has no words, it has no pictures, it has no title. So she sits under her covers with a torch and she opens it, looks at the blank pages, and then she sees this very tiny little elf bot who's waving at her, kind of beckoning her into its world. And she ends up falling through the pages into the snowy wonderland of the North Pole, where this elf bot takes her to Santa's marvelous mechanical workshop, where he has a very special room full of broken toys and objects that he doesn't know what to do with. But he hopes that, being inventive young Lily, that she's got some ideas of what he can do with these broken toys.
Writing books and magical stories, which is what you do any time of the year, must be amazing. How special is it when you get to focus on Christmas and use that magic as well?
It's such a magical time as a child, isn't it? It's everything stops. And I love that feeling. And I loved it as a child. You know, you've got no school, your family's around, hopefully, luckily, you know, and you can just pause and be and enjoy a bit of sparkle, a bit of magic, and, you know, games and being together. So it's lovely to take that kind of time and use that as the basis for a story. I think everyone remembers the books they've read at Christmas as well, the stories that you snuggle up to read on Christmas Eve, and that lovely cozy feeling you get when you put your slippers on and your new Christmassy pajamas and sit there with a nice hot chocolate and some mince pies or whatever and have a good story. So it's kind of trying to capture that cozy atmosphere. So to write a Christmas story feels quite lovely to perhaps be part of that canon of Christmas, I suppose.
Now, this book, as we've said, is all about upcycling. Your, like, other books have, as I mentioned, focused on STEM. What is it about why you write books that want to do more than just tell a story? We want to focus on inspiring kids that are listening.
Do you know what? It comes from when I was at school. As I got into secondary school, I loved science. I loved biology, physics. And when I got to take my A-levels, I had a physics teacher who really encouraged me and said, oh yeah, Vashti, you're really great at physics. You know, you should maybe think about doing A-levels. So I signed up for A-level physics. And then when I turned up to my first class, I was the only girl in a sea of boys. And I ended up kind of chickening out, I suppose, and thinking, I don't want to be the only girl in this class of boys. And I swapped subjects and ended up changing to geography, which I love as well. But that experience always stuck with me. And as I became a writer, the best writers always put the things that you're really interested in yourself into your stories. So that experience of loving science, but also giving up on it in some ways, stood with me. And it makes me think, what if there was, you know, more girls in my class? What if, you know, there were more female STEM teachers in schools? And what if it was just more normal to have a balance of girls and boys taking the STEM subjects? I think it's a lot better now, but there's still a lot to be done. So that experience really shaped me. And the beauty of being a writer is you can explore science still. And in fact, you get the best part of it because you get to make any inventions possible because you say so. In your fantasy world, you can make anything happen, which is a lovely feeling as well.
So upcycling then, this is making something new from something old, trying to cut down our waste and how much we use and then throw away. I hope that you've done like some research of your own getting ready for this book and you've upcycled yourself. What are some of the secrets that you've learned about how to do it brilliantly?
One of the secrets is to take things that you kind of love that are broken and don't give up on them. So for example, like with my children's clothes, when they grew out of them, I would kind of cut them up and make them into a blanket or something like that. So it's that kind of, just because something isn't working for you anymore or you've grown out of it, you can still make it into something new that you can grow into. And things like making dressing up clothes, I think, is a really good one, because again, you grow out of dressing up clothes. Kids grow out of those things really quickly, but you can, you know, remake them into something else. So really, with my own children, that's how I would kind of do my own things. And I've just made my own pin board. I know it's not a toy, but I'm quite proud. I just kind of thought, I wanted a pin board for my pictures, for my stories. And I thought, you know what, I can make that. I can upcycle. So, and I had this old board, just got some materials and pins and ribbon, and off I went.
There are so many ideas I'm sure we can tackle and we can learn. And lots in this new book, Santa's Marvellous Mechanical Workshop by Vashti Hardy. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you. Oh, can I just give a big shout out to Katie Cotto, actually, who did the marvellous illustrations for the book. I think what she's come up with the toys and her kind of input into imaginative upcycling has been brilliant. So, yeah, I encourage you to, yeah, look her up and have a look at her beautiful illustrations. She's done a great job.
Let's do Dangerous Dan then, where we look at some of the most mean, weird, strange and deadly things in the universe. This week we're headed into the sky and onto the water to check out the Great Northern Loon. Now this bird is a large water bird. It's a diver. It sticks its head down and pokes into the water where it's bobbing about to try and find food. You find the Great Northern Loon all across the world, mainly breeding, nesting in Greenland, Iceland, North America, where it's really cold. Get this, they head to the UK in winter. They think that the UK is hot in winter. They do know that places like Florida, Jamaica, and Australia exist. I'm not too sure. Now, the Great Northern Loon is just under a metre long. It has a wingspan of about 1.5 metres. They are a beautiful bird, greyish, silver, with a broad black head and neck, some green flecks across it, and they get dangerous because they are very protective. It's got an incredibly sharp beak and is quite vicious at using it as well. If it feels in danger, or that its babies are in danger particularly, it gets to work. This Great Northern Loon flies high before swooping down, sticking its beak out, using it as a sword to go for the eyes, the scalp, and even the throat, which means this cute bird that looks so very sweet can be devastating. And when it wants to attack, it is mean, mighty, and merciless, which means the Great Northern Loon goes straight onto our Dangerous Dan list. Before we finish up this week, let's take a deep dive inside your body, into your gut and your stomach. We're checking out our microbe friends, Benny and Mal. This is part of our Demanding Dilemma series. They're talking all about ethical dilemmas. That is, questions about whether it's something or good or if it's bad. It's a difficult choice about the right thing to do. And this week, they're looking into the GM food debate. Let's find out more.
Benny and Mal's Demanding Dilemmas, with support from Nuffield Council on Bioethics.
All right, Benny and Mal here.
Yeah.
We're teasing out a few demanding dilemmas for you. Big word, isn't it? Dilemma. It just means having a difficult choice to make.
You choose. Like whether to go for fish fingers or a burger if you're in a cafe having a bit of lunch.
Good example, Mal. And you might not know this, but an ethical dilemma is a difficult choice about the right thing to do.
You choose. Like if you got a horrible jumper from your auntie for your birthday, would it be wrong to give it to a charity shop?
And here's where it gets really interesting. Some ethical dilemmas are about difficult choices we have to make about how we use science.
Dilemmas about science? Not sure I get what you mean there.
Science is all around us. It helps us do a massive amount of stuff, but just because we can do some things, well, that doesn't mean we should.
Yeah, imagine how upset your auntie would be if she found out you'd given the jumper away. All my fingers to the bone, knitting that I did.
All right, calm down, mate. And I really, really think we've had enough of that sound effect now, Mal. So let's get back to the GM food debate. GM crops are genetically modified. That means scientists have altered the instructions right inside their cells before they were planted,
to make the resulting crops stronger, more nutritious, or just tastier.
Bigger and better crops means we can feed more of the billions of people on the planet and can even make them healthier in the process. Although some people think that we could feed the world right now, it's just that richer countries have an unfair amount of the supplies and how they are controlled.
I see what you're getting at. Maybe the problem itself can be solved a different way. I like that.
And it costs a lot of money to make these super GM seeds. And it isn't going to be the farmers in the poorer, developing world who get all the profits, will it? It will be the big companies who make them, and they're not going to be giving the seed away, are they?
Yeah, but if the crops they grow are stronger, then the farmers will benefit too, won't they?
But only as long as they can keep buying the seeds. You see, many of the GM crop seeds are infertile. Instead of using seeds from last year, they've got to go back and buy some more.
But the seeds are often infertile for safety reasons, so that they can't cross with other types of seeds in ways we can't predict.
But it's almost impossible to keep the genie in the bottle. Genetic material from GM crops has been found in other nearby plants. So even if everyone tries to be careful, you can still get cross-contamination. Lots of people say, we just don't know enough about genetics to predict what those effects will be. And some are worried that it could result in serious environmental harm.
Come on, even big believers in GM crops agree that there need to be rules about how the crops are grown.
Yeah, and who decides what the rules are? Do the farmers in poorer countries get a say?
Well, I'd certainly hope so, but those in favour think that the benefits of being able to grow greater amounts of food, nutritious food, mean we have to find a way to all get behind GM crops, because the population of the planet isn't getting any smaller. So, as you can see, it's a right old dilemma.
A demanding dilemma. A positive, brain-busting, bioethical bamboozler. I wonder which side you'll agree with.
You choose.
Benny and Mal's Demanding Dilemmas, with support from Nuffield Council on Bioethics.
I really love thinking and discussing demanding dilemmas with Benny and Mal. They're back next week with us in our Fun Kids Science Weekly podcast. And that is it for us this time out. If you've enjoyed the show, remember you can leave a voice note with any question that you have on the free Fun Kids app or at funkidslive.com. We've got loads more brilliant podcast series for you on the app or on the website as well, wherever you get your shows, Google, Apple, Spotify, places like that, and you can listen to Fun Kids all around the country on your DAB digital radio. And if you've got a smart speaker, remember to wake up and say, Alexa, play Fun Kids.